Good morning once again. Happy Sabbath. There's a fella who got a brand new hearing aid. He was very proud of it. He was bragging all about one of his best friends, or bragging about it, all about it to one of his best friends. He's going on and on and on, and his friend looked at him, you know, listening intently. His friend looked at him and said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Well, what kind is it?" The fellow who just got the new hearing aid looked at his watch and said, "That's about 9:30. Or maybe you heard the story about the guy who thought maybe his wife was going deaf. So he asked the doctor, I said, "Doctor, seems like no matter, you know, what I say, she doesn't hear me. Is there anything I can do?" And the doctor said, "Well, I'll give you a test. What I want you to do is next time she has her back to you and she doesn't know you're there, ask her a question just in a normal tone of voice and see if she hears you. And if she doesn't, take about, you know, two steps forward and see if she hears you. Ask the question again, see if he hears you, and just see how close you have to get before she can hear you." The guy says, "Okay, sounds reasonable enough." So he goes home and his wife has her back to him. She's there at the kitchen counter and looks like she's getting things ready for dinner. So he's about 15 feet away. And he asks, says, "Dear, what's for dinner tonight?" "Nothing." So he says, "Okay, well, take a few steps." So he gets up, he's about 10 feet away, asking a normal tone of voice, and says, "Dear, what's for dinner tonight?" "Nada." So he goes a few steps forward, 5 feet away, and says, "Dear, what's for dinner tonight?" Still, no response whatsoever. So finally he gets up right behind her, just inches away from her ear, and says, "Dear, what's for dinner tonight?" She turns around and says, "I said 3 times, hamburgers." Sometimes it's not always the other person. Do you ever have a tough time listening to other people? Maybe they're telling some long, boring story about their Aunt Tilly's cat. Maybe they're just going on and on about all their problems, all their aches and pains, things you've heard about for years. Or maybe it's the same old story about how their life is a mess and they made bad choices, and even though you try to help them through that time, they never really listened to you and they made the bad choices anyway. Maybe it's about how some analysts are worried about the economy and how we're going to handle the recovery of this pandemic, and that if the economy doesn't begin to expand, that we may be in a state of contraction, and as the gross domestic product drops below a certain point, blah 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 blah. Maybe we don't listen, or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe you're talking about something to someone and you notice after a while they begin to glaze over. Or maybe they sit there and start fidgeting with their coffee cup or tapping their toes or something like that. Maybe no matter how many times you feel like you've explained something to them, they don't understand it. If you've ever found yourself in this situation, the problem might not be that people don't hear you or you don't hear them. It might not be that you don't understand or they don't understand. The problem could, in fact, be an issue of respect. Could be an issue of respect either for or from another person, or perhaps about a topic. Today I want to talk about the subject of listening and respect. Listening and respect. How to listen and respect. I'd like to begin by talking about the idea of listening and respect in regards to the subject, the topic of conversation. For example, maybe somebody you know is really into baseball. And, of course, you know, things are a little bit different right now because baseball is not being played. But perhaps, you know, leading up to the baseball season, someone was talking to you and telling you all about how excited they were this season about their favorite team. Let's use, for example, I don't know, say the Cincinnati Reds. And they were excited about the prospects, who they'd picked up for pitching, the new center fielder, the guys they had down on the farm club, the fellow who was really fast but needed to work on his batting skills. they go on and on about a subject, and you know, after a while you find yourself not very interested. Now, maybe you have all the respect in the world for this friend of yours, but the truth is, the subject of conversation, baseball, is just not something you're interested in. It just doesn't tickle your fancy. In your mind, maybe the subject itself doesn't really warrant any respect. It's just a game, the players get paid too much, whatever. Maybe the subject of baseball is something that you don't really follow much, even though your friend who you love dearly is big into the subject. So you put up with them talking, but 10 minutes later, when the conversation is over, you couldn't tell them the thing that he or she just said to you. This is a typical example of listening and respect. Even though the subject is boring to you, you patiently listen to your friend, or at least you are quiet enough to let them talk for a while. And that's good. We should do that. This is what we should do for one another. Now, I would say about this situation this. If your friend, who can talk for hours about a subject, say baseball, and the subject doesn't really warrant respect in your mind, you're not that all that interested in that, we should show some respect for our friends who might be listening to us drone on and on about baseball. We should watch for their body language. If they don't seem too engaged in a conversation, you know, we need to be aware of that. We need to be able to take those social cues and understand, well, you know what, maybe it's time for me to stop talking and let them talk about what they want to talk about. We need to show respect for one another in a conversation. We need to show respect for one another in a conversation. You know, one of the things I like to keep in mind, too, is that if somebody's talking about a subject I'm not really interested, again, we'll just use baseball for an example, even though I personally am interested in baseball. Let's just say I'm not interested in baseball. And our friend is going on and on for hours, maybe not hours, but for quite a long time, and we kind of get bored with it. For a minute, suppose it's not your friend talking about baseball. Suppose it's Hank Aaron, Johnny Bench, somebody who is a famous baseball player. Would your tone change? Would you listen a little more intently? Because this person is somebody famous? I think that's something we should consider as well, because I think what we begin to see then, if that's our attitude, then perhaps we do have a little bit of an issue with respect for someone else. Perhaps we would be showing preference or a bias for somebody who was maybe a little bit more famous or, in truth, a little bit more of a subject. But I only mention this so that we understand we need to really consider our conversation with one another on both sides. Whether we're the ones doing the talking and possibly putting people to sleep, maybe it's a long, boring sermon about listening and respect. Whether we're the ones doing the talking or whether we're the ones doing the hearing, it's a two-sided thing. Listening and respect truly comes down to respect for other people. Whether you respect the person that's talking or you respect the person that's listening, it comes down to a respect issue. We have a great example from someone in the Bible who did an excellent job of both listening to others when they talked and also who was listened to because others respected him. The example I'd like for us to look at today is that of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, you can begin turning to the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah lived in what's known as the post-exilic period. This is the section of scripture that I have an opportunity that I'm very fortunate to be able to cover at Ambassador Bible College. The post-exilic period is the time in which after the nation of Israel, the kingdom of Israel, had been split into two kingdoms. You had the northern ten, and then you had the southern two, which is primarily Judah, half the tribe of Benjamin. The northern tribes are taken captive by Assyria, and they kind of get spread out and lost to history to most of the world. And we've talked a little bit about that, how we have a little better idea of where those tribes might be, but that's the subject of another sermon. But Judah and Benjamin, we have a much better idea of, because history shows that they were taken up to Babylon, and then they were able to return 70 years later. Jeremiah prophesied that. But in that time between, in that 70 years time, it's called the post-exilic period. They were exiled from Jerusalem, and now they were living captive in Babylon. And Nehemiah's story is really when they began to start returning back to Jerusalem. So Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther are the books that are typically considered to cover here the post-exilic period. Let's start Nehemiah 1, and let's learn a little bit more about Nehemiah, his life and times. Nehemiah 1, we'll start in verse 1. It says, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, it came to pass in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. So Nehemiah was living up in Babylon at the time. We see a little bit later he has a job there in the royal court. But he was living up there, and so Hanani comes back from Jerusalem, and so Nehemiah asks him, how are things back in Jerusalem? How are the people? And these are his fellow kinsmen, those of the tribe of Judah. Verse 3, it says, and they said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. So it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. We talked a few weeks ago about the subject of fasting and fasting with purpose. So Nehemiah here, we see, he fasts with purpose. So he hears bad news from back home, and he fasts to seek and understand God's will and what he needs to do. Nehemiah gets word that his homeland is basically in ruins. Jerusalem is in danger. The temple had been pretty much destroyed, the temple had been rebuilt at this point, maybe about 70 years prior to Nehemiah's time, which that was 70 years after the fall of Jerusalem. So just a quick chronology here, just for reference. Jerusalem fell in about 585 B.C. The Jews began to return somewhere around 70 years later, around 538 B.C. There's some interpretation on time here, by the way, when you might consider that Jerusalem really fell versus when they really began to turn. Won't get into that completely. We go into that in the class. So you kind of look at it from when Jerusalem began to fall to the time the Jews began to return to 70 years, or if you look at it from the time that Jerusalem completely fell to where the majority returned, it's 70 years. It works out 70 years either way. We can talk about that perhaps another time. The temple was completed in 515 BC, so that is 70 years after the fall. And the wall, which is what Nehemiah will be working on here, is completed around 445 BC. Keep in mind, Nehemiah was probably born and raised basically in captivity in Babylon by exiles. He had never been to Jerusalem to this point, but he knew it was his hometown. He knew that it was his hometown. He had heard things about his home country, about his countrymen. He had concern. And notice what he did here. He asked Hanani a question. And then he listened to what Hanani had to say. This might seem like a small thing, but consider the following. Verse 2 tells us that Nehemiah had asked because of concern about the people in the city. He had respect for the situation or the topic at hand. And because of that, he was ready and willing to listen to what Hanani had to say. In fact, he listened so intently that when he hears the news, he sat down and he cried. He tore his clothes. He began fasting. He didn't offer a comment right away. He didn't turn around and run off rashly with a group of people and try to pick up some lumber and things along the way and, you know, in a quick hurry, try to go and rebuild the wall. It was a grievous moment. He responded appropriately with grief. And I think that's something we have to understand. When we're in a conversation, whether we're doing the talking or someone's talking to us, you know, we have to allow people to have emotions. They may be sharing something that's very difficult and very painful. They may be telling us something that's very difficult, very painful for us to hear. You know, part of respecting other people and listening, or part of respecting other people and talking, is allowing them to have their emotions. Now, we have to be careful that we don't just have emotional reaction and let that run away and let things run away. But we have to understand, you know, Nehemiah was hearing something very hurtful at this time. He was hearing that his homeland was in distress. He reacted there accordingly. It was a very grievous time. And so he grieved. He also responded and understood and listened to Hanani, because Hanani was a respectable source. He knew that he could trust him. Now, that might sound simple, but imagine for a minute, you know, what if Nehemiah didn't respect Hanani? What if he didn't respect Hanani? Come on, Hanani. It's not that bad. Get over it. They'll be fine. It's not a big deal. Do you really know that's what happened there? I mean, did you confirm it? Did you see yourself what the temple looked like or what the wall looked like? I think we begin to see that if there wasn't respect between Nehemiah and Hanani, this conversation might look very different. What about us? We ever have a situation, maybe, you know, we're at home and I'm looking for my blue socks. And I say, hey, honey, where are my blue socks? The response I get is, well, how do I know? Why are you asking me? They're your socks. Shouldn't you keep track of them? You see what begins to happen there if we don't have respect for one another. You know, a more appropriate answer might be something like, I don't know where your blue socks are. Last time I saw them, they were on the bed with the other laundry and needed to be folded. You know, it's a subtle thing, but I think we can see how a lack of respect on either part can make things become a very tense situation quickly if we're not careful. So I think it illustrates how important it is that we have respect for one another, whether we are listening or whether we want someone to listen to us. See, another important aspect of listening and respect here is we continue the story in verse 4. Verse 4. So it was when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. Verse 5 says, and I said, I pray, Lord, God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Both my father's house and I have sinned. Nehemiah begins to pray to God about this situation. There's no doubt Nehemiah is showing respect to God here. He's showing the respect to God. He asks God, please listen to me. Please listen. He doesn't go to God and say, God, you need to fix this now. He asks God for an intervention. He asks God, please listen, and he acknowledges we were in the wrong. We brought this on ourselves. We made this mistake. There's a lot of lessons we can learn from this scripture. Certainly, those are two. One, that when we go to God, we can ask him to please hear our prayer. And when we do so, we are showing respect. And two, we recognize that the problems we have, you know, it's often because of the things we've done to cause them. And so we acknowledge our fault and our guilt. But you know, it's okay to remind God of his promises. It's okay to remind him of these things. If you've ever been anointed, you know, perhaps you've heard the elder say something along the lines of saying, God, we know you promise healing. Now, we don't know when it'll come, if it'll come right now in a physical form, or if it'll come when we have a new spiritual body. But when we do so, we remind God of his promises. If you keep your finger here, turn over to Psalm 103. Psalm 103. Verse 3. It says, well, we'll back up verse 1 for context. Psalm 103, verse 1 says, bless the Lord, O my soul. And all that is with and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. Who forgives all your iniquities? Who heals all your diseases? Now that's a promise from God. And so we remind him in a respectful way when we anoint that that is a promise. Now, anybody who's had children knows and understands that it's a lot easier to grant things to your children when they listen and they respect, when they're obedient. You know, if they ask and they have a cookie, and they normally ask if they can have a cookie, you're much more likely to give them one than if they've had a problem where they steal from the cookie jar, right? You know, it's a two-way street, again, is the point. God, we can ask him to listen to us. We should do so in a respectful way. But you know, if we don't obey God, we might not be surprised if he doesn't comply with the things that we request. Now, I'm not saying that God's a magic genie and be good, you'll get everything you want. But I think we understand and know that obedience is a part of being a Christian. It's a part of showing respect, and it's a part of what is expected from us if we want to be listened to. Nehemiah showed respect to Hananiah about the bad news. He now shows God respect when asking for help. Respect, especially when we want to be listened to, is a two-way street. Going back to that conversation about baseball, what about when the subject isn't boring to us? What if a friend begins to talk to us about baseball, and as it turns out, we are huge baseball fans. We're big Cincinnati Reds fans, too. And so we're really, really interested. The subject is near and dear to your heart. Maybe it's not about baseball. Maybe it's about finances, something else. Who knows? We might think, oh, well, then it's easy to listen, right? Actually, sometimes that's when it's hardest to listen. That's when it's hardest to listen. Sometimes somebody starts talking about a subject, and we're very anxious to share what it is we think. And so we quit listening. And instead, what we do is look for an opportunity when they stop talking or take a breath that we can start talking. Again, this is an issue of respect. What's worse is maybe it's a subject you're passionate about, they're passionate about, but now there's two different viewpoints. You really think that they should have used a first-round pick, you know, for a center fielder, whereas they think they should have used their first-round pick for pitching. Now we've gone from a conversation into an argument, and things can really begin to have an issue with listening and respect at this point. You know, what's funny is sometimes people wind up arguing even when they're trying to say the same thing. Even when they're trying to say the same thing. They just want to be heard. Now, there was a comedian who did a bit on the radio, and the bit on the radio was about the President of the United States going up for a press conference. I mean, you know, when they do that, oftentimes there's dozens of reporters out there, and they're asking questions. You know, what about troops in Iraq? What about, you know, when we're going to be able to return to work? What about this? What about that? And they're all kind of clamoring to get the attention of the president. And this comedian and his bit, what he would do on the radio is all the reporters, instead of asking different questions, all the reporters were saying the same thing, which was, I want to hear the sound of my voice. I want to hear the sound of my voice. I want to hear the sound of my voice. You know, it's kind of poking fun a little bit at the reporters there, how they just all want to be heard. Isn't that what happens with us sometimes? We just want to hear other people hear us. We want them to hear what we have to say. When people stop listening to the other person, we get in danger of stopping respecting them. When we stop listening, we get in danger of stopping respecting them. The conversation can descend into chaos, an argument, and no one walks away happy or edified. Now, if you stop and listen, you might find out, oh, wait, we were both actually trying to say the same thing. We were both trying to say the same thing. You know, going back to the idea of a husband and wife arguing about where the socks are, does one not want the other person to find the socks? No. They both have the same goal. Now, the husband wants to find the socks. The wife probably wants him to find the socks so she doesn't have to put them away, right? Their end goal is the same. Going back to Nehemiah, what did Nehemiah and God both want? Picking up in verse 7, it says, we have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, nor the ordinances which you commanded your servant Moses. Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest part of the heavens, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Well, Nehemiah, the people there in Babylon, God, they all wanted to have a restored relationship with one another. Everybody wanted to see the temple restored, the wall built. They wanted to see Jerusalem become a thriving city once again. And we'll see, if you read the rest of the story, you'll see that because there was listening and respect that went on through this whole process, that's exactly what was accomplished. Verse 10, it says, now these are your servants and your people whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name, and let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. So we see at this point, if we didn't know the story already, we'd just kind of be reading this and thinking Nehemiah is just a guy on the street maybe who was wondering about what had happened in Jerusalem. We see there's a clear understanding on Nehemiah's part. You know, they need to be respectful to God. They need to show that respect through obedience. And he's asking, God, we're trying to be respectful. Please listen. And that's okay. We see that example there where Nehemiah does that. They say, okay, God, we were wrong. We want to honor and respect you. Please help us to do so. Please listen to our prayer. Of course, the story isn't over, because now, at this point in time, we find out that Nehemiah is the king's cupbearer. He does have a place in the court. What would this mean? for Nehemiah to be the king's cupbearer. This in and of itself is an important position of respect. And we might look at this and think of, you know, this person as a servant, as like being a waitress or a waiter at a restaurant. And sometimes there's a mentality and a thought that, oh, these people, you know, they're below me. I've got, you know, some big high-paying job, and this person's making minimum wage, living off tips. You know, they're below me. You know, I don't need to respect them. Unfortunately, that's a mentality that exists in our society today. But, you know, when we read and understand what a cupbearer is actually doing, I think it probably helps us gain some respect for waiters and waitresses, but particularly in Nehemiah's position. Because he wasn't just any cupbearer. He wasn't just any waiter. He was the cupbearer to the king. This was the closest, literally, physically, you could be to being the king's servant. He attended to all his needs. He knew what the king liked. Again, you were literally the closest person to him. So if something happened that he didn't like, or if you gave him something he didn't like, who's the first person he's going to see? Yeah, it's going to be the cupbearer. Of course, he also acted as a security guard. They would often taste the food to make sure it hadn't been poisoned. You know, so in some ways, you know, Nehemiah was expendable, you know, more so than the king. But because Nehemiah put his life on the line daily for the king, this created a mutual respect. Nehemiah had an advantage here. He had the king's ear. Because he was the closest, because the king trusted his life to the cupbearer. Now, he might often use the cupbearer as a listening board, someone to talk to. You know, maybe somebody he could share his thoughts with that he could trust when he couldn't trust anybody else. He knew that what he said would be held in confidence. It wouldn't be blabbed to the tabloid news because, although it was a position as a servant, it was also a very desirable position because of his closeness to the king. Let's continue the story in Nehemiah 2, starting in verse 1. Nehemiah 2, verse 1. So it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I had never been sad in his presence before. You know, that's another important aspect of being a cupbearer, is it's not that necessarily you had to fake your emotions, but maybe in some respects you did. You know, because you were in the king's presence all the time, he doesn't want somebody who's down, depressed, and not nice to be around. You know, he's going to want somebody who's enjoyable to be around. Oftentimes, people, the cupbearers, those who serve them closest, were very physically attractive too. It says the wine was before him, so Nehemiah was there in the king's presence, and he says, you know, I'd never been sad in front of the king before. That was kind of interesting when you think about that. Think about somebody you know well, your spouse, a good friend, your parents, your children. Have you never seen them sad? Chances are you've probably seen them in all sorts of states of emotions. But it says the king had never seen him sad. And we're going to see that that plays a critical role here in just a minute. Verse 2, he says, therefore the king said to me, why is your face sad since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart. So I became dreadfully afraid. We see the king reads them like a book. Nehemiah comes before him. He's got this sad countenance, and the king says, oh, hold up. Something's not right here. It indicates how close they were. And I think it indicates the level of respect that the king had for Nehemiah. The king respected his friend, Nehemiah. Verse 3, it says, and said, continue verse 2. It says, so I became dreadfully afraid, and I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city of the place of my father's tombs lies waste and its gates are burned with fire? So he uses this phrase. He uses this phrase, may the king live forever. Now, that's a way of showing respect towards the king. Kind of the same way in our society, you know, if we go to see the doctor, you know, we call him, you know, Dr. Smith. We don't call him Joe. when we, you know, refer to the president of the United States, we refer to them as President Trump or President Obama. It's a sign of respect, you know, because they're in that position and we should have respect for them. So Nehemiah shows this respect. Then he goes on to answer the king's question. And he says, you know, yeah, I am sad. You're right, because my hometown is in distress. Verse 4, then the king said to me, what do you request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. This is an excellent example of being instant in prayer. You know, I've been in situations, I'm sure you have too, where somebody asks you a question. And maybe it's a question that caught you off guard. And sometimes you just offer up a quick prayer and you say, Lord, you know, please deliver. Here, I know I need to give the right answer. Please give me wisdom. Please let me speak in a way that's respectful and that we can listen to one another. And then you go into your conversation. And that's exactly what happens. Notice the king doesn't say, you know, why are you complaining to me about this? Your people were conquered, and you know what? They deserve to be in misery. That's what they get for being conquered. Why don't you just shut up, do your job, and bring me some more wine? The king doesn't treat Nehemiah that way, does he? The king obviously had a level of respect to Nehemiah. Respect, as we all know, is something that is earned. The king respected Nehemiah, so he was willing to listen to him. Continuing verse 4, he says, I prayed to the God of heaven, verse 5. Says, and I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may be rebuild it. Once more, with great respect, again, he says, if it pleases the king, Nehemiah lays out his request. Now, he doesn't beat around the bush. The king asked him a direct question. Nehemiah gave him a direct answer. I think that's another part of our listening and respecting. You know, when we ask a question of someone or when someone asks us a question of us, it's not really respectful to them to try to beat around the bush. It's respectful to try to answer that question. Now, we have to be tactful, of course, but, you know, we should answer the question that's being asked and not give them a non-answer. Verse 6, then the king said to me, the queen also sitting beside him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. So the king asks for some details here. And this makes an important point. Now, when you're having a conversation, it's okay to ask some clarifying questions. And if you're telling somebody something, you're sharing something with someone, you know, you should expect them to perhaps interrupt, say, oh, no, wait a second, could you clarify? You said Thursday. Did you mean this Thursday or next Thursday? No, we should be able to have that give and take. It's a matter of respect for one another to be able to do that. As the person who's speaking, we have to be careful. We don't assume that the other person is interrupting. Maybe they, in fact, are really only trying to understand what you're saying a little bit better, so they ask a question. Verse 7 says, furthermore, I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the region beyond the river, that they must permit me to pass through all I come to Judah. And in a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he must give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which pertains to the temple, for the city wall, and for the house that I will occupy. And the king granted them according to the good hand of my God upon me. Artaxerxes gives Nehemiah what he asked for. Nehemiah here records and acknowledges with respect that this is all because he had asked God. He gives the credit and glory to God. You know, we see another wonderful example here from Nehemiah. If the king would have said, go ahead and go do what you need to do, and Artaxerxes got, or Nehemiah got the road down the road a little bit and said, oh, hey, yeah, by the way, king, I need travel paper so I can go ahead and go beyond the river. King says, oh, yeah, sure, okay, I'll get that. Then he goes a little farther and says, oh, hey, I'm going to need timber. You know, at some point, the king's probably going to be a little bit annoyed at Nehemiah coming back and asking all these questions. So I think there's a lesson there that, you know, if we have something else we need to say, you know, we need to go ahead and make this conversation complete. Don't leave details out that could wind up causing a problem later on. Again, a little bit of a side point, but something to consider. We won't read the rest of the story, but Nehemiah goes on and is able to rebuild the wall. This conversation between the king and Nehemiah wasn't their first one. It wasn't the first time they had talked. Probably not the first time they had had a bit of a heart-to-heart. Now, he says the first time that he saw Nehemiah be sad, but, you know, he'd been in that job a while, and he had probably had some personal conversations with the king before. The king listened to Nehemiah because he had respect for him. Could you imagine, again, what would happen if the king had no respect for Nehemiah? You want to do what? You want to leave your job. I trust you with my life. You want to leave this job. You want to go off on some trip for your people who I have authority over. You want permission for me to do that, and you want to take all the timber? Somebody get this fool out of here, throw him in the dungeon, and get me a new cupbearer. You know, it's a very different conversation if there's no respect between the king and between Nehemiah. Nehemiah had a pattern of listening and respect. He listened to Hanani when he asked him a question. He respected God when he went before him. Because he respected God, God listened to him. With the king respected Nehemiah because Nehemiah was respectable. He was willing to listen because he had shown and established that respect between one another. There's one other aspect of listening and respect I think we should consider. For this point, let's take a quick look at one more story. This is a story in regards to Hagar. That's a story, Abram's or Sarai's handmaid. God had promised Abram a child. You might recall Sarai, Abram's wife, tells Hagar's handmaid to go in, you know, have a child with Abram. They do so, but afterwards, then there's hard feelings. Sarai has hard feelings towards Hagar. Hagar is then basically kicked out, and she's on the run, on the lam, so to speak. So let's just pick something up over here in Genesis 16. Genesis 16. In regards to this story. Hagar was an Egyptian, so she was, would not have been the same background, the same faith as Abram and Sarai. So she was a servant, so they, she would have had a different belief. There's really no record where Hagar ever, converted or began to worship God. But notice something here in the conversation, Genesis 16, starting in verse 7, it says, "Now the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness." So she's already fled by the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, Sarai's maid, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I'm fleeing from the presence of my mistress, Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit yourself under her hand." Then the angel of the Lord said to her, "I will multiply your descendants exceedingly, so they shall not be counted for multitude." There'll be so many of them, won't be able to count them. "Behold, you are with child. You shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction." The Lord has heard your affliction. Now, again, we don't see any record here where Hagar actually prayed to God, but he saw her affliction. And he heard that story. He saw that story, and he responded to it. He responded to it. Verse 12, it says, He will be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. He shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees," for she said, "Have I also here seen him who sees me?" So she didn't see God, but God had heard her. Now she said, this God, whoever he is, he sees, a step beyond just hearing. Now he heard, he saw her request. Again, there's no real evidence that Hagar ever worshipped God in spirit and truth. What there is evidence of, though, is God showed respect to her and listened to her. I think that's a powerful lesson for us. It's a reminder that even people who don't agree with us, people who don't have the same faith, we do. We can have respect and listen to them. Listening does not mean agreeing. Listening means listening. And so I think we see that lesson here. So God blessed her, and of course there's prophetic things involved there as well. But the point for us today is that even if people don't think the way that we think, we should still have enough respect to listen to others. Listening and respect go hand in hand. Listening and respect go hand in hand. It's a two-way street. By listening, we show respect to other people. Likewise, if we want to be listened to, we must show respect. We talked about the missing blue socks. You probably have other examples. And I'll tell you, I'll share with you an example that I ran into years ago. It was a place I worked. And you've maybe seen people like this. There's a fellow there who refused to pronounce people's names correctly. He would always put some little twist like that. He would always put some little twist in their name. Did not quite say it correctly. Now, he didn't have a speech impediment. It wasn't a matter of him having an accent or anything like that. I understand sometimes people can't say certain words or because of their accent it doesn't come out the same. I'm not talking about that. This was a deliberate thing he did. He did it to be funny. He did it to be rude, quite frankly. But you know what happened? Is that over time, people there never really respected him. They never really respected him. They weren't anxious to help him out when he needed anything. I think it just shows an example of how listening to others, treating them with respect, are tied together. That if we want others to listen to us, we need to show them respect, even if it's something as simple as saying their name correctly. I'd like to begin to conclude today with a few tips. A few tips that can help us grow in listening and respect. These are some things you've probably seen similar sorts of lists over the years. Either in print or on the internet. I didn't get these from a specific place. These are just kind of collections of things that I've heard and learned over the years. But I want to share with you six tips today on how we can be better listeners and better be listened to and better be respected and be better respecters of others. Some of these I mentioned earlier, some of them I haven't, but just give a few tips for us to consider on this subject. Point number one, tip number one, make eye contact. Do you ever talk to a person who's looking everywhere except at you? Now, it doesn't take long to get the idea that, you know, maybe they're not really listening. On the flip side, if we're not giving someone eye contact when they're talking to us, then we're probably not showing them the respect that we should be. Number two, stop what you're doing. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, if you're standing at the coffee pot and, you know, we put coffee in and you're starting to add cream and sugar and somebody says, hey, how was your day? That you stop, put the coffee and sugar down and say, well, my day was fine. How was yours? No, I'm talking about when we're having a real conversation. You know, we're having a real and important conversation. Maybe it's even a little bit challenging. It's polite to stop and listen, to give them our full attention. On the flip side, you know, we need to be cognizant of what other people are doing. You know, if someone's sat down, you know, they've been looking forward to doing something all week, you know, this particular TV show they watch every week at 8 p.m. and they sit down to watch it. You know, we don't come off them at 8:05 and say, okay, I would like to sit down and let's go into the kitchen and talk about, you know, repainting and remodeling or something like that. You know, we need to be respectful to others during their situation. So, you know, we should be willing to stop what we're doing, but on the other hand, we need to be careful that we don't sit there and expect people to drop everything they're doing instantaneously just to listen to what we have to say. We have to be able to read the clues, the body language, and understand and respect their time. Tip number three, try to put yourself in their shoes. Try to put yourself in their shoes. You know, someone had a terrible week and they're telling about how they were trying to load their car, their groceries in the car, and it was raining and the cart kept rolling away. You might think, yeah, big whoop. You know, what's the big deal? You know, but if that's you out there and your shoes are soaked and your cart's slipping away and, you know, your ice cream's starting to melt or whatever because things are going behind, well, you know, it's important to you then. So we can stop and put ourselves in other people's shoes. Tip number four, particularly, of course, when we're talking about a more serious conversation, we should repeat back to other people what it is we think they've said. It shows the other person that you are listening, and it also gives them a chance to clarify if, by perhaps, we've misunderstood what they said. This leads into tip number five. Ask clarifying questions. Ask clarifying questions. There's a cartoon I remember. My brother and I always get a kick out of this. We still use this phrase sometimes. It was two little elves. They were little cobblers, and they were making shoes. And you had first little elf, Jimmy, you know, he's holding the tack, and Timmy's swinging the hammer. And so Jimmy says to Timmy, when I nod my head, you hit it. So Jimmy nods his head, and what's Timmy do? Wham! And Jimmy right in the head with the hammer. No, so Timmy would ask a clarifying question, say, you want me to hit the tack or your hand, or your head? You know, would have been a little Timmy maybe with us today. But, you know, it's good to stop and ask clarifying questions if we don't understand. Point number six, this is perhaps the biggest one. Don't listen to answer. Listen to understand. Don't listen to answer. Listen to understand. The motivational speaker, Stephen Covey, is the one who made this famous. Probably not the one who originally came up with, but it's kind of like what Grandpa used to say. Just because somebody says something to you doesn't mean you need to give an answer. Sometimes we feel like we have to say something. Maybe it's because we think the person is wrong. Maybe it's because we want to show everybody else how smart we are. But you know, sometimes the smartest person in the room is the person who doesn't say a word. And put another way, simply, we should think before we speak. We should think before we speak. You could probably come up with other tips. I'm sure there are more. But hopefully these few tips can go a long way to make each of us better at both giving and receiving, listening and respect.